Generative design isn't like a magical tool that just solves all of the problems.
Hi, everyone. Welcome and thank you for joining me. My name is Franco Variano, and I'll be your host for the Tech Plus Art podcast. Tech Plus Art is the community for curious individuals and creators who are looking to make a dent in the universe. Together, we're exploring the new frontiers of creativity, humanity, and how emerging technologies will continue to shape our culture, professions, products, and much more. Join me on this journey as we speak with artists, makers, researchers, designers, and creators from all backgrounds and fields. Tech Plus Art is an inclusive community, and we make all our content for you. So we want to hear from you. If you've got any suggestions, topics you'd like us to explore, or contribute to yourself, let us know on Twitter or via the website. You can check us out at maketechart.com or at maketechart everywhere else. So with that said, let's get to today's episode. Today we're speaking with Patrick Hubner, an interdisciplinary designer who uses creative algorithms to explore fresh and meaningful stories at the intersection of design, art, and data. By applying new and experimental techniques of data-driven creativity to his work with generative and interactive design systems and programming languages, Patrick develops opportunities for brands and cultural institutions to set themselves apart by telling unique and meaningful stories. He has worked with many leading international agencies, and his work has won global recognition and numerous awards. I highly recommend checking out his website at patrick-hubner.com or in the show notes below. Patrick and I had an amazing conversation about the future of creativity, generative design, and much more. So let's get started. Hey, Patrick, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Cheers, man. It's my pleasure.
Pleasure's all mine. I'm super excited about the opportunity to chat with you today and to learn more about you and the work that you do. So let's kick it off there. Let's get to know a bit about you. Can you tell us where you're from, what it was like growing up, what you studied?
Certainly. I'll try to keep it brief, not bore you with my entire life story here. But I grew up in Paderborn, which is like super small, but somewhat tech-focused city in Germany, west of Germany to be exact. And I guess as a kid, I was somewhat what you would call a nerd in the early 90s. Grew up just with computers at a very young age and started early on to like program, design, just hack around a little bit and create like all kinds of programs, games, silly stuff, you know, the thing you do when you don't know what you're doing but still having fun with it. It started like a small company when I was 16, just because there was like kind of this demand for programming stuff and applications and software. So that's how I kind of got my first small professional go in that direction. But actually, I studied nothing that is related to what I'm doing now. I actually studied English and American culture literature because for a while, I was really not that into computers anymore. And during that time, I kind of was exposed to a lot of graphic design work and a lot of music and all the other beautiful things this world has to offer. And kind of at some point, that all back together, like graphics design, programming, and all the other things. So that's like the super quick rundown of the things I got to know when I was young.
That's super cool. And so talking about bringing all those creative influences back together, how did you end up getting your start in, as you call it, designing these creative algorithms? What does that mean to you? And how did the confluence of those inspirational sources come together to help you learn about that?
So I feel like it's a little bit relevant to the story is that before I got into what I call creative algorithms, after studying, built a company that specialized in fusing like branding and electronic commerce, and I spent there like almost 10 years of my life actually as the creative lead and became somewhat of a creative director of that company. Kind of grew from when I joined like 4 people to 40, so that was crazy wild ride, and like seeing that all grow and with our own rules and ideas was really interesting. And why I mention that is because I probably worked on hundreds of projects during that time, and because it was so much about electronic commerce, I was early on exposed to design that was driven by data and by influences of algorithms, because a lot of times it comes down to what sells the best, what metrics show if something works or not. So that was kind of a big influence on my way of thinking about communication and design in a way. And then while I was doing that, I, by chance, met someone who's now like one of my best friends. He's called Tim Rodenbrücker, who also works in this field now. And he kind of exposed me to processing, which is generative, like sketchbook or design software. And that really got me started just with the whole thing. And he was doing like this kind of light looping music thing where he had this guitar effect processor thing, which could like store 30 seconds of any loop. And he made like some really radical, like live techno music with that kind of stuff. And after a while, I joined him with that, with programmed visuals I did in processing. So like audio rective projects and basically any kind of weird stuff that just took the audio from the room and the concert and threw that onto a projector and onto the wall. For a while, we actually had a lot of fun like touring with this kind of combo. And that's kind of what got me started in doing it more regularly, actually, in a way, because there was this kind kind of audience and this kind of totally new thing to do. And I think the most important thing that got me really hooked on everything and kind of changed what I do now in my life in a way was that he also was so intrigued by what I was doing that he wanted to learn it himself. And what we did is we made a retreat or took a retreat at a cabin in the woods, like no internet, no cell phone connection, no nothing, just the woods and us, and made a deep dive into generative design, like researching all the awesome artists, the projects, everything that went out there, like coding every single second of the day and taking walks in the woods, just philosophizing about all of that stuff. And that kind of got me going on just doing sketches every day, every other day. And so just gradually got better at this. And I was still working at the other company, but then kind of made that connection of how powerful actually this approach of generative design is and what you can do with it. That kind of made me, you know, take that leap of faith at the end of 2017 and say, you know, I'm just going to go in full time and try to explore whatever is possible there. That's like the super long story of how I got there. But because you were asking kind of what it means to me or what I understand the term like creative algorithm. I don't know. I don't have the perfect definition because it's always in flux, but for me it's like something, I would say it's a new and exciting chapter in the field of applied design. For me, could also be art, obviously, and to me it like kind of fuses like aspects of like storytelling, experience and branding with algorithms, human interaction, data, artificial intelligence, programming, all of these aspects. So it's a very wide field. It's something that I think only now has become possible, where computers have become so powerful and so mainstream and data is available to everybody. So it's an exciting field that really fuses a lot of different aspects into exciting and new ways of expression.
Yeah, super cool. And maybe diving into that a little bit, just because you mentioned the storytelling, how does your work specifically, or how do you inject it into your work? How does the storytelling kind of balance with the technology and the design and the art? How do you make sure that one isn't overpowering the other, but really mixing them all together to kind of convey the objective that you're trying to do?
That's a really good question. Maybe the most important one, actually, because for me, I feel like that independent of any technology or approach, at its very core, everything is always about people, and people love to tell stories. And that's like at the core of all of design and art. I'm probably going to be mentioning design a bit more than art because that's what I've currently been doing a bit more, though I do love the art part of things. So why stories are so important to everything is that I believe design and art has the potential to kind of alter people's perceptions and emotions in a way. What I felt like with generative design, which you can do, is you can really bring your stories or ideas to the people. And that is something that this kind of chapter of design, what it's really new about it. And I think it's really interesting to find something where people can maybe explore and play and interact with the stories that I come up with. And this can actually be like a physical place or a digital one. But in any case, I really hope that people kind of form these somewhat lasting connections to these things because they get to experience it in a somewhat different way. So that's like at the start and at the beginning of everything I think about, you know, how can I find something interesting that people can actually relate to and connect to? And that's also something that I see sometimes taking not center stage at some briefs or projects, because people kind of have this idea that if it's cool, if it's new, if it's fresh, it's going to be good. But I always put myself into the shoes of people and think, you know, how would they think about it? And just because it's a flashy technology, they might look at it for 10 seconds and just move on, right? So storytelling really is at the core of everything that's important for people. And then they will stop and look at it and think about it and try to, you know, find out what's happening. That's really important to see that with this, you can kind of get people to think about things in a new, in a fresh way, which is really interesting for me as a designer, because there are so many unexplored possibilities and opportunities in that field, really. So to maybe sum it up in one thing or in one sentence, for me, it's really about finding narrative for topics that are just now kind of emerging because of our world is becoming global and the internet is ubiquitous and computers, you know, are in the hands of everybody. So that's really something interesting where storytelling takes center stage.
Absolutely. Yeah, a really excellent point. I'm glad you brought that up over the, you know, the value of technology, even though the technology is super interesting to a lot of, you know, the general public, it may not mean the same thing as to the individual who's exploring it or who's adopting it in a new and exciting way, especially if that storyline isn't kind of connecting the two together.
Yeah, technology really, it's something that I work with on an everyday basis, and it makes possible what I do. It makes possible what we do right now. So it's amazing. But to many people, it's not that important. They don't really think about it. And I think that's actually great, and that's important, because that still means that whatever story we come up with is just going to be more important to people. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. No, really good point. And so I guess kind of tying that a little bit together of the conversation so far in the fact that you're, you know, really positioning this use of technology and design as a new part of applied design. So like actually, you know, driving it into like the mainstream kind of like applied work culture, how do you position the value of this to potential customers and clients? How do you help them understand that like, hey, this thing is vast and it's not just about design, but applying this technology and design and storytelling together?
Yeah, it took me a couple of years to find maybe stories or narratives or images that kind of click and work. And I'm obviously still exploring it myself because so much hasn't been done yet. But I kind of depend like that a little bit on the agency or client or project I'm working on. But I think there's a couple of things that always are really important. And the first thing I always tell people is that kind of generative design or creative algorithms, whatever you want to call it, really changed the very core of how the design process actually works, which is really interesting. And I give these talks that I always start with this simple image, where I try to say, like, imagine a world in which you don't design what you already know, but kind of like teach the computer what it is that you actually want to achieve. So it changes the way how things work, and you know, kind of employing algorithms in the creative process, for example, can yield unlimited choices for design brief. You can make a computer design like 1,000 variations of the kind of thing you asked of it, and this kind of alters what's possible and changes the role of designers to somebody who kind of co-creates with computers in a, I believe, radically new way, and you become like somewhat of a creative partner in crime with the computer. So that's something really interesting. Because initially that doesn't necessarily click with people, but once they realize that they have like this entirely new kind of arsenal of tools at their disposal, it kind of changes how they think about it. But maybe something more specific is that generative design always uses data at the very core of everything we do. And I think especially in the applied communication view, that's really interesting because that leads to interesting discussions about the very core nature of maybe company or brand or product. Kind of what makes that tick, what data does it generate, what's the essence of that? And that's like the question I used to ask even before I did that, because that's most interesting to me, like what it really is made up of. And trying to visualize this essence is, I think, at the core of many of the works I do, but also at the core of the work that a lot of other people do. That's not just, you know, flashy visuals, but something that ties into what we were talking about earlier with the narrative aspect of it. Also, what I really believe is really interesting is that generative design is something where we actually get to create our own tools. So it's not something where we use like Photoshop or InDesign products that have been designed for a completely different landscape. It used to be somewhat of this kind of top-down approach, as you design a brand or an idea and a story and you feed it to the people, and then that's basically that. But with what I do and what other people do in this field, it's like kind of more of building something which is on equal ground with the people, and where we can actually bring our stories to them and kind of see how they interact with it and learn from that and start a conversation with them and actually get better insights into what they're interested in. It's an almost democratic kind of approach to design. So that's obviously the philosophical part of it, but it also means better metrics and more learning about what it actually is that people do with it. And that's what a lot of companies and agencies are obviously interested in. And maybe the last thing that, you know, depending on who I talk to, which is really important to some, is like the kind of business side of things. So if you think about it, what I do is teach computers how to be creative. That's a big word, but, you know, how to at least carry out creative models and duplicate them in an interesting way. So that just increases productivity dramatically in a way. And it frees up time of designers to do more creative work and actually let the computer take care of the actual handiwork in a way. And what's really interesting about that is that you can produce products or print runs or whatever it is at a huge scale. So you can make things scalable, plannable, incredibly fast, and completely unique to even individual people. So, I mean, that saves a lot of money, makes things super fast, and just ties into the whole process. So, I mean, again, that was like a super long answer to that, but there's just so much to it. And I could probably just continue rambling on about all this. But yeah, again, it kind of depends a little bit on who I talk to, if it's a designer or a company or somebody who's more in the business side of things. But I think there's something in there for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. No, there's definitely a lot to dive into and explore as part of that answer. And so one of the things that seems to be interesting about, you know, humans when we're creating is we like to have a lot of control. And maybe that's because of this existing workflow. And so when you look at something like Photoshop, like you're moving the elements around the page. And now you've talked about co-creation with an algorithm where you're sort of giving it the instructions on a creative algorithm, and then it's generating for you, you know, a ton of different options. But how do you address the, or do you think it's a concern? Like, is it just because we haven't been exposed to this long enough, or is it impossible to address this? But how do you integrate, you know, client or brand requirements or some of the traditional workflow into this generative world where maybe it seems like we don't have the control, the same level of control? I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, in the end, it still comes down to what I was saying earlier, right? I mean, in the end, generative design isn't like a magical tool that just solves all of the problems. So you still have to have a good creative brief. You have to have a good story, a strategy in place. So in the end, I think it's always also about limitation in a way, right? Because you can do basically infinite variations of something. That in itself isn't a good thing. It's an interesting option and possibility to explore a large space, maybe. But and what I learned as a really valuable lesson early on was actually to really limit what I do and how I think about things, and to just kind of focus on the most important key areas, because you can quickly get lost in trying to cram too much into a project, and that usually tends to not go very well because people just don't have the time to actually focus on that. But if you make it a simple, good story that is easily understood, that works. And you know, there's a lot of discussion about, you know, if that actually is a bad thing, you know, having a computer create so much output. And I've actually given a couple of talks at places where there were a lot of designers, and some were like almost scared, or they said, you know, this is going to make us unemployed, or, you know, this is an abomination, you can't do that. But for me, that's why I'm mentioning that so many times. It's more about new tools and new ways of thinking and different ways of expression in a way. But yeah, in the end, it's always something where, you know, you have to balance that in a way. So I don't know if that answer makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that makes sense. And maybe I can bridge that into the next question where I wanted to ask you, like, how do you approach building your tools, your design systems, your creative systems to help you realize these ideas and in the applied design that maybe a client or you are looking for? How do you set those constraints that you just talked about when, you know, you basically have an infinite blue sky of possibilities?
Well, in the end, the first thing is always really just talk to the clients. And obviously, what I try to do whenever possible is actually fly out or drive out and work with people like on location, because that allows me to kind of onboard them a little bit into the way I see this creative process. So whenever possible, I give like a short talk or presentation just to get people initially on board, like the way of how I believe these things work and what we're actually going to build. So that usually helps a lot. And then it's like most of the time about building like a design tool or a space in which we can explore the possibilities. So let's say, because I was mentioning that I was doing that with Tim, like an audio rectif project, right? So we know maybe audio is going to be driving that, and we want to have a certain aesthetic. So I really build a tool that runs inside of the web browser that everybody in the design team and the creative team can actually use. And it's almost like a conversation, a creative conversation in a way, where once the technology is at a point where, you know, you actually get to see visual things, I try to expose as many parameters and options so that people just can play with them and explore that. And during that, you know, two things happen. They kind of understand more how data-driven design works, right? And how data can actually create narratives, visuals, graphics, and all that kind of stuff. But we also get closer to maybe the essence or the idea of what we're actually trying to convey and how that data works or looks. I mean, I've worked on so many different projects with so many different data sources, and you always have an image in your head of how it will probably end up looking like. And most of the time, that was never the case because the data was just totally different. And that's a super interesting ride. It's actually the most fun part of the entire creative process, just seeing how that evolves over time.
Super cool. And so maybe kind of on that note, what has been one of your most ambitious projects to date?
I mean, a couple of things come to mind, but I think one that for me personally was super ambitious was one that I developed with agency Lendor London. And it's for an organization that's called Women and Political Leaders. And it's kind of cool because it's an organization that focuses on equality and empowerment of women, the political sector. And they were doing their first ever international conference when I was brought onto this project. And the idea was to kind of tap into real-time Twitter conversations around like certain keywords, like women in power, women in equality, women in success, and visualize that as a real-time data sculpture and use that as the key visual for the event. But and I thought that was really interesting. They placed this live visualization of data sculpture at various locations around the event where people would like gather to chat and talk about things. And the idea was to kind of start conversations around these topics. So basically, whenever they were standing there, you could see like a lot of people are talking about women in power, but in a very negative way, right? So we're doing sentiment analysis on all of these Twitter conversations, and I developed, could call it an artificial intelligence, though I don't really like that word, like a recurrent neural network that was able to analyze those tweets and actually determine for every single tweet if it's like a negative or a positive one. And these factors were fed into this data sculpture in real time. And every single element of it is actually a single tweet that you can look at, analyze, and it's 3D data sculpture that kind of constantly evolves over time. And what was really interesting about that brief as well was that we're storing this data, so obviously anonymously, to at a later stage actually look back in time and see, you know, what was the conversation around these topics when certain key global events actually happened, things happened. So that's, I think, a really cool story and narrative. For me, it was also really ambitious because I built like everything. So built the like backend neural network, custom node express server, statistical visualizations, Twitter API connection, WebGL 3D stuff, all the storing and analysis. And it runs on computers, tablets, phones, presentation walls. Can actually press a button and generate an image that you can share on social media. And they were also able to generate posters with it, and image videos, and all that kind of stuff. And it all runs in real time in the web browser. So yeah, that was fun, but very crazy project for me because there were so many unknowns when I jumped into it. And I'm still amazed that it actually works. But yeah, no, it's a cool project. It's a lot of fun. And I think it also shows like the potential of, you know, what I was talking about, like finding a space that people actually can explore narratives in a new and different way, how it becomes a little bit more democratic and different from what is in there. Yeah, maybe last thing, this was one of those key projects where we were actually having a very strong expectation of what the data set would end up looking like, because we were actually all quite pessimistic about the conversations on Twitter. And I kind of thought, you know, it's going to be very negative, but we actually had to adjust the color scheme and everything because it turned out that the conversations were quite positive, actually. We learned a lot about the scene and, you know, worldwide conversations. So that was great learning for everybody involved.
Absolutely, super cool. And just to kind of get a sense of the scale, like how many hours or months did that kind of project take? And, you know, what was the client reaction to seeing that, especially when, you know, you're expecting the data set to look like one thing, and then all of a sudden you kind of have to update projects in real time to match the data as it's developing, as it's growing? Like, what was the client expectation and sort of realization when, you know, you see it coming together a little bit more?
I mean, agency work basically always works the same way. Here's a cool brief and the money is okay, but it has to be done by, I don't know, April. And that's in that case, because of the event, it was in November then, but there wasn't a lot of time. I basically spent on less than 2 months on it, from like I had zero lines of code to it was completely working and running. So I actually headed out to London and worked with them on location just because that sped up the process a lot. So a lot of fun, but long hours. And oh my God, I was sweating a little bit during the entire time. Because it's like you always have the clock ticking. That's quite normal for agency work, but in this case, again, just the vast complexity of things, or the vast amount of components and moving parts in that project, that was quite interesting. The client's reaction was really positive. I mean, what was fun about the project is that there were hardly any things that we could look up, no references in a way, right? So we just had to come up with ideas and interface ideas and ways of visualizing it as we worked on it, right? So, I mean, this is one of those projects where, I don't know, maybe in that way, nobody's ever done it before. I don't know. So that was cool. It was obviously always not the best thing to work on something like this with such a tight time budget, because when we were done in like, air quotation marks, you know, we had so many more ideas of how we could have made it better, but that's maybe for another time. But yeah, everybody loved it, and it was showcased on the primary keynote event. Everybody was checking it out. I was actually monitoring everything in real time. I felt like this, you know, I was in Germany, but I had like all the statistics, and I was checking out all the graphs and Google real-time data. It was kind of fun to see like kind of light up, and then just everybody was checking it out and working with it.
Yeah, super cool. And we'll definitely link to that project so people can kind of explore it. And I know you got a case study up on the site and it's really well put together. So people can kind of check it out and see exactly what you're talking about.
Yes.
And so throughout the conversation, you've mentioned, you know, processing, changing the way that, you know, we talk about design, WebGL, some other tools. What do you feel is missing in the industry at large? What do you wish existed, not just in terms of the conversation around this new type of applied design, but also like tools or gaps that you feel exist or don't exist?
I was kind of thinking about this question a lot. And I mean, maybe a couple of years ago, I would have said if it's not about the question of tools, kind of awareness was missing. But I feel like right now, really, it's kind of golden time. So I mean, like this topic of generative design and all these things, people are really taking a lot of notes. And I get approached by agencies and people constantly. I have a lot of design students reaching out. We're working on their master thesis and want to incorporate this. So there's like a lot of buzz happening right now. So I mean, from that perspective, I would say there's not a lot missing except for maybe like the understanding of how to use these tools. I don't know. I mean, it's all web-based stuff I personally do nowadays anyway, and it's such a huge field. There's so many technologies. I mean, there's Node.js, GitHub, Webpack, WebGL, 3.js, everything. I mean, browsers are better than ever. For my personal world, I don't miss anything really. So, I mean, I've been gifted with so many awesome, you know, tools and technologies and frameworks that you can use that it's more about putting them into good use and finding ways, you know, how you can actually express something. So I was really thinking about that question, but for me, I don't feel there's anything missing. It's more just go out there and build something, you know, it's all there.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you ever thought about expanding like or trying something beyond the web, or is the web really where you feel like the culmination of technologies is kind of best suited for?
I didn't start in the web. I ended up in the web, actually, due to a couple of reasons. I mean, for what I do, the web has the huge advantage of basically running on every platform you can imagine. So no matter if it's an awesome computer or laptop or a mobile phone, it just works. So that's great because what I built can be brought to the maximum amount of people on this world. Everybody with an adequately equipped mobile phone and internet connection can see what I do, right? So that's what I really love about the web. I just recently built for a very large company, I built an in-house design tool that was not based on web technology, but was actually an application for both Windows and Mac and also Linux. And because of the security restrictions and, you know, macOS Gatekeeper and all that kind of stuff, they had a lot of trouble getting that to work in their corporate offices. So that's also one of the huge things about the web, which I love. And it's also just something, you know, that it's just a new way of doing things. So I think for me personally, it's the future. I know of other people who use open frameworks, processing, Unity, all that kind of stuff. Also great approaches, especially if you want to incorporate hardware a little bit more. But I mean, even for my art projects, I'm just preparing a new one. It's just kind of cool because people usually have the worst expectations of, you know, what's necessary to set something up. But when I tell them, look, in this case, all you need is a microphone, a web browser, and a projector, and it works, you know, that's great. So after much consideration, actually, the web has become my home because it's just really reaching into every possible channel. And it is equipped with some of the best tools you can find.
That's super cool. I mean, it's amazing to hear. And so like on that note, like where do you think the generative design industry is headed? Not only in Europe, where you see tons of, you know, agencies or individuals like yourself, like I really feel like there's a great scene there. But where do you see it heading kind of around the world as more people become aware and look to this kind of technology?
So yeah, I mean, definitely a lot of interest. I already mentioned that. I say it's kind of like golden times. So I think that's definitely going to be an just explosion of interesting projects because things just become more accessible. So I mean, I went kind of the hardcore route by doing it all myself and coding it all myself. But there's amazing tools now which are visual. There's a VVV, Cables GL, Touch Designer. So things where people don't have to get into like the nitty gritty parts of coding, but can just express their creative ideas in a different way. And I see that becoming more and more, and also just, I think, more aesthetically interesting, but also conceptually more interesting. So I see that going a little bit more to the direction of actual designers, people who think about these things in a different way. So I always kind of make the joke that I'm a designer who can program and not a programmer who designs, because I feel that's a huge difference. No offense to anybody, but it's like for designers, usually the technology takes, it's not center stage really. And that's how, you know, more interesting projects emerge than just tech demos. So I think there's a lot of stuff happening there. What I'm personally very interested in is anything that's related to augmented reality, because the tools are almost there, just so close to it. And I think that has the potential to really change how people kind of access these things, because it's not just on a two-dimensional screen anymore, but becomes part of the world in an interesting way. I think there's a lot of discussions to be had around that. both positive and negative ones. But for art projects, for design projects, I think that's a super interesting field where I just can't wait to get my hands dirty on. So I think that's also one of those things where there's going to be a huge explosion in the future. And like maybe last thing that I always think about is just extending that to more and more places. So I've been approached by agencies who work for like museums or stores. So I think it's going to touch a lot more physical locations in the future and kind of, again, just step out of the internet browser or like just an Instagram feed and into your real world. Personally, can't wait.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds super exciting. And so you mentioned earlier that, like, you know, a lot of people, you know, design students are reaching out to you, agencies, everybody's reaching out to kind of understand like your perspective on this, and you share different, you know, advice. But I guess if you could distill some of that advice down to one thing and share that with this next generation of upcoming creators, designers, developers, everybody who's kind of, you know, coming into this golden age now and looking around, but they're brand new and they don't know where to start, what advice would you share with them?
A story is still the most important thing ever. You know, technology is just a tool. Don't get distracted by it. There's a million possibilities. Just start somewhere, set yourself small goals, and just have fun with it. And the rest is going to come by itself. Technology is not the solution. It's just a tool. So the story is most important.
Totally agree after speaking with you, you know, understanding, you know, really where the story fits into that. And so maybe just to kind of help wrap up, are you able to share any of the next projects or focuses that you're, you know, currently exploring, anything that you're working on or kind of have top of mind? What can we expect from you in the rest of 2020?
Actually, I have a lot of exciting possible projects coming up. I'm right now working on a very large one, which is super interesting. It's, I think, one of the most complex ones I've ever built. And because of the nature of these things, I can't talk about any of those projects, but they focus on a lot of aspects from sonic projects to data-driven projects. I wish I could talk about them because there's some really exciting stuff there. I hope it's going to be on my website. It's hopelessly outdated. I have the huge problem of never getting around to updating that. So I think I already have like 13 projects which are not documented on my website. What I can share is that I'm currently working on a pretty cool audio-reactive art installation, which hopefully is going to be shown in Cologne and Amsterdam in the not-too-distant future. And because I just really love talking to people and sharing my perspective, but also obviously to learn from what other people think about it, is what I'm currently doing is kind of starting my own YouTube channel where I kind of plan to start like sharing some of my knowledge about generative design or just how I see things. There's a lot of great things out there already, so I'm just trying to focus on like really practical projects and not like, you know, how does an array work or how do you draw a simple thing, but just showing some of my smaller, more, you know, tackleable projects and kind of show how that works and just try to get people excited about it, but also just, I don't know, share the process and see, you know, what the discussion is and what people want to see. I love just giving talks and some way the fun that comes of educating and sharing knowledge. So I hope to extend that on the YouTube channel at some point. See how that goes.
Well, more reason to stay tuned, and we'll definitely link, like I said, to all your social profiles so people can check out you, your work, and stay updated with, you know, what is to come here in 2020.
Perfect, man. And hopefully long beyond that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Patrick, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. It was awesome to have you on the show.
Thanks. Love what you're doing. Love all the podcasts and the website. So I just keep doing what you do. And who knows, maybe at some point there's going to be a version 2 and what we did today. And fun. Cheers, man.
Thank you for joining me for another episode of Tech Plus Art Podcast. We're a very small team behind this project, so we greatly appreciate all your support. If you love our content and these podcasts, consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts and sharing it with a friend or two. This really does go a long way in helping us get discovered and reach more creators. As always, you can find us online at maketechart.com or at maketechart everywhere else. See you soon.